Hello, it's Fiona from Scottish Independence Podcasts here, and we've got a bonus Tuesday extra for you this week. It's one of our Hot Topic reports on Michael Gove's gagging order. Welcome to Hot Topics. This one isn't really that hot, but it should be. The reason we're picking up on this is because I included a little snippet in this month's Bits and Pieces podcast, just a little bit of Tom Arthur at Holyrood. We got some feedback following the Bits and Pieces going out saying, I hadn't noticed that at all, which made me think, well, maybe this is something that isn't very well noticed. And I only spotted it by accident. I was combing through Holyrood just checking what was going on.
Same with me. I listened to that little excerpt, basically thought the same thing, and I ended up saying to you, well, what's the name of the bill again? So it's...
Yes, it's the Economic Activities of Public Bodies Overseas Matters Bill.
Okay, and that's quite a long title as it is, but it's got a sort of subtitle that's even longer, and I must say when I read this, I just felt it was a bit chilling. So the longer title is A Bill to Make Provision to prevent public bodies from being influenced by political or moral disapproval of foreign states when taking certain economic decisions, subject to certain exceptions and for connected purposes.
Or as Michael Gove explained it,
making sure that the UK government speaks with one voice, in a united way, on behalf of all of us, on foreign policy as a reserved matter for the government.
But it's a Westminster bill.
It's a Westminster bill, and because it impacts on Scottish ministers and Welsh ministers, they had to seek legislative consent. Now, both Holyrood and the Welsh Senedd have refused consent, which gives you an idea there's something here that we ought to be paying attention to. Let's listen to Tom Arthur, first of all, outline just what exactly it means. And we'll also do the same with the Welsh minister, because it's interesting they've picked up slightly different things about the bill, although both of them are firmly against it.
The bill would limit the executive competence of Scottish ministers by preventing them from taking a moral or political disapproval of any foreign state conduct into account and devolve procurement and investment decisions. Not only that, but it would also make it unlawful for the Scottish ministers to publish a statement saying that they intend to take such matters into consideration, or even that they would intend to take such matters into consideration were it not unlawful to do so. It places the policing and enforcement of this into the hands of UK ministers. The Secretary of State is given sweeping powers to compel the Scottish ministers and other public bodies to provide information. They are given powers to issue compliance notices, setting out the actions which the Scottish ministers should take or refrain from taking. And they are given powers to fine the Scottish ministers, subject to interest, should he or she conclude that the terms of that compliance notice have been breached. And all of this, remember, is in relation to decisions that the Scottish ministers may take about otherwise entirely devolved matters. This displays a complete disregard for devolution, for this institution, and frankly also for democracy, limiting as it does the actions of Scotland's elected government. The bill not only potentially prevents the Scottish ministers from taking a decision now or at some point in the future in relation to a devolved matter which they consider to be the right decision, it also prevents the Scottish ministers from seeking to advance debate and discourse on the matter. Scottish ministers would not even be able to publish a statement to say that it is this bill which is stopping them from acting on devolved matters in the way they think is appropriate. The UK government argues that it's necessary to include the Scottish ministers in the scope of this bill in order to mitigate against the threat of boycotts, which it says undermines UK foreign policy. But what evidence do they have to support such claims? Public procurement is a devolved matter. Our devolved Scottish legislation makes explicitly clear that goods, services and bidders from a country with which a relevant trade agreement applies are entitled to be treated equally to domestic bidders. It makes explicitly clear that if a public body in Scotland, including the Scottish ministers, does discriminate against a bidder on this basis, then that bidder is entitled to bring remedial action in the domestic courts. What all of this means is that it is already unlawful for the Scottish ministers or any public body in Scotland to operate a blanket boycott policy against such countries. The provisions of this bill are completely unnecessary. Procurement and investment decisions must always be taken in compliance with international obligations. But that does not mean that they should be taken in an ethical or moral vacuum. It is important that Scotland is able to take a values-based approach to international engagement, as set out in our international strategy and the vision for trade. It would be unacceptable if the bill were to prevent this Parliament, the Scottish Government and Scottish public bodies from doing what is morally right now and in the future. The bill significantly restricts Scottish ministers' ability to take rounded, proportionate decisions about the suitability of individual bidders for public contracts. I have asked UK ministers to consider amending the bill to address this point, but understand that they have decided not to agree to that request. Presiding Officer, this bill, and in particular the inclusion of the Scottish ministers within its scope, is an unacceptable restriction of executive competence in relation to devolved matters. The threat of fines for the Orwellian thought crime of daring to state the simple effect that the law has on Scottish ministers' decision-making would set a dangerous precedent. I move the motion and I ask the Scottish Parliament to withhold its consent to this bill.
And a similar motion was put forward in the Welsh Parliament. Here is Cabinet Secretary for Finance, Constitution and Cabinet Office Rebecca Evans addressing the Senate.
We cannot consent to a bill which seeks to lawfully prevent our public bodies and democratic institutions from expressing an opinion on overseas matters. The Welsh Government strongly opposes what is essentially a gagging order, which can only be seen as harmful to democracy. Furthermore, I believe the bill is completely unnecessary, as we already have protections in place within the World Trade Organization Agreement on Government Procurement and enshrined in the 2015 Public Contracts Regulations, which require fair and equal treatment of overseas bidders where a relevant trade agreement applies. The UK can already set sanctions for trade without the need for this legislation. For example, the sanctions placed on Russia when they declared war on Ukraine. I also think it's important for me to address the reason why the UK government felt the need for this bill, to ban public bodies from carrying out their own boycotts, divestment and sanctions campaigns against foreign countries. I want to be clear that the Welsh Government, in rejecting this bill, does so entirely for the reason that we do not agree with the significant impact it would have on the freedom of public bodies and democratic institutions across the whole of Wales. A freedom to decide not to purchase from or procure from or invest in organisations involved in human rights abuse, abuse of workers' rights, destruction of our planet, or any other harmful and illegal acts. We must remember that we're here today also to discuss this bill's implication for devolution, specifically the executive competence of the Welsh ministers.
Basically, then, they've refused consent because this bill's going to put limits or strictures on what Scottish, Welsh, I mean, presumably Northern Ireland ministers can and can't do when it comes to what, making comments about foreign affairs or
expressing opinions about political matters. And particularly, it has been called the boycott bill because it's been positioned as if it's to prevent local authorities and also devolved parliaments from interfering in Westminster's foreign affairs. Here's Gove again.
It is simply the aim of this legislation to prevent public bodies adopting their own foreign policy as such decisions should ultimately be the remit of the government and this House.
Specifically, they seem to want to prevent any boycotts of goods from certain other countries. Now, the point that comes up in the debate is that, hang on a minute, there's all sorts of trade rules that govern trade and not being able to allow unfair competition, for example. But there is a point at which there's a moral position and has been taken several times in the past when you think of the sanctions against Russia. Go further back in the whole South African anti-apartheid boycotts. Yeah. There's been more recent suggestions that it's come up in relation to the Israeli situation in Gaza, although the bill, it predates the situation.
Okay, yeah. They can't stop demonstrations, not with this bill, and they might with other kinds of legislation. Well, but this is about a bit more specific. It's about stopping public bodies wherever, from what? Defying, as it were, from defying what Westminster said. This is our foreign policy. You're not getting to say anything against it. And you're not even getting to say, I would oppose this if I was able to do it, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's almost expressing an opinion even, yeah, and saying what they would have done had they not been forbidden from doing it. Obviously, it's the Labour Party of the ruling party in Wales, but also Daniel Johnson from Scottish Labour was supportive of Tom Arthur's position, so we can listen to him.
In 1981, Glasgow District Council permitted the freedom of the city to Nelson Mandela. Subsequently, the campaigns undertaken by local government were instrumental at a time when national government did not want to concede the issues regarding South Africa.
And he took an intervention from Kevin Stewart.
And the point that Mr. Johnson has made about South Africa and the campaign against anti-apartheid South Africa was largely led by local authorities here in Scotland and throughout the rest of the UK. And thank goodness that they played a part. But the other aspect of this is, of course, that many of our local authorities have twin cities. And sometimes there is hardship gone through with some of those twin cities, and I've seen it myself in Aberdeen, two twin cities, Bulawayo in Zimbabwe, and Gomel in Belarus, where the local authorities have chosen to break links at certain points because of political situations in these countries. Is Mr. Fraser and others really saying that local authorities should be unable to do that?
It is important that democratic bodies such as local government reflect the values of the people that elect them. I think it is important that they are able to use their economic judgment, and it's not just matters of global import, but other issues such as fair work, fair trade, the environment. And it's only right that local government is able to exercise its economic judgment using its procurement powers to ensure that its procurement is following in line with its value judgment. And if that is deemed to be unacceptable, exceeding their parameters, well, there is a mechanism for that. It's called an election. And local people can judge for themselves about who they return to local government in order to do that. And what does it say about the state of this government's foreign policy that it is so weak that it is undermined by the procurement positions of local government? This is a nonsense. But what is worse is it goes further, because it's not just local council this applies to. Bodies such as universities, universities who are supposed to be independent. And I worry about what this does in terms of their independence and what further ramifications this may have. Universities guard their independence with great pride, but also are very cautious about anything that would undermine it. So I think it's useful and important to note the University of Scotland has stated unequivocally that they would want universities removed from the provisions of this.
Do we know anything about what position Labour took in Westminster?
We've got a clip of Angela Rayner, who seemed to be saying that, you know, as with many other things right now, Labour more or less agree with the Tories, but she thought that it had gone too far. So we'll play that clip as well.
And on these fundamental principles, I thank the Secretary of State for acknowledging that we share common ground. And Mr. Deputy Speaker, it is on this basis that I have hoped by now that we would have had a bill that reflects that common ground. But unfortunately, our efforts for consensus have been met with blanket refusal. Four times we came to this House with an alternative approach, but four times ministers have led the benches opposite into voting down every single one of these proposals and sought not to unite the House, but to divide it in every sense. We did not want to be in this position where the House is being told to approve such deeply flawed piece of legislation. But Mr Deputy Speaker, this is where we have regrettably ended up, because the bill before us today is indeed deeply flawed, with sweeping new powers that create more uncertainty and run counter to their international obligations, provisions which would ban public bodies from making procurement decisions based on a country's use of forced labour, a clause completely unprecedented which makes it illegal for public bodies, many of them directly elected, to express their view on policy. A new power for the Secretary of State himself to call in and interrogate those he suspects fall foul of the bill. And at its heart, a measure that is incompatible with both the government's own long-standing foreign policy and international law, flying in the face of the UK obligations.
And then, interestingly, Kit Malthouse, who I believe is a Tory,
yes,
he also thought it had gone too far.
I speak with a heavy heart and some dismay, and tell the front bench that I will be voting against the bill this evening. This bill obviously comes at a dreadful time, as we mourn the deaths of so many Israelis in heinous circumstances on October the 7th, and the deaths of so many Palestinians subsequently, many of whom still lie under the rubble. The fact that we would, in this House, be seeking to legislate against non-violent protest in such an illiberal and draconian way seems to me tragic at this particular point in time. There are broadly three areas, as the Secretary of State knows, where I and other colleagues attempted to amend the bill and where we have concerns. The first is, as the Shadow Secretary of State pointed out, the conflation, well, the separate identification within the bill of Israel, its conflation with the occupied territories and the Golan Heights, we do believe contravenes our undertakings at the United Nations and indeed international law, and that, of course, we think will mean that the bill spends a lot of time in the courts if it eventually sees the light of day. That also at the same time is a cause of great dismay to our allies in the Arab world, who of course we need at the moment more than ever to join us in seeking peace in this dreadful conflict that's taking place in the Middle East, and that we should undermine our own status as fair dealers, if you like, in that part of the world seems to me an unforced error. The second area of serious concern is obviously the impact on free speech. Again, as the opposition front bench has pointed out, it seems to me incredible that we are putting elected officials and others in a position where if they just stand up in certain circumstances and say they disagree with the law, they will be committing a criminal act. It seems to me an incredibly illiberal and backward step that we would strike a blow against pluralism in that way. The bill could stand without those restrictions on free speech, and as the Secretary of State will know, we attempted to amend it to remove them as well. That was also rebuffed. The third area is the sheer scale of the impact of this bill and the number of organisations that are going to be drawn into it. So not just the Local Government Pension Fund, of which I am a member, but also every university in the land, private sector companies who perform a public service of some kind, who are contractors to the government, will also be drawn in. And this is important because, as the Secretary of State will know, this area is a very litigious one.
Well, it must be a rather decent Tory then.
Well, you know, you'd like to think there were some of them left.
One of the things that's coming into my mind is that, you know, just actually very recently, there's a move to stop Prestwick Airport, which is publicly owned, from allowing it to be used for, you know, any goods or bound to Israel or Israeli planes. So that wouldn't be possible to do then, sounds.
I suspect it wouldn't. I mean, this is not yet law. This bill is still making its way through Westminster. But if the idea is to prevent any kind of criticism or disagreement even with Westminster policy, then, yeah, it certainly suggests that would be the case. SNP MP Chris Stevens also spoke in the Westminster debate.
The bill is, I believe, and we as a party believe, an assault on the devolution settlement for Westminster, not just of the Scottish Parliament, but the Welsh Senate. Yeah. The legislation undermines devolution and restricts the ability for public bodies to make their own moral judgment in matters of human rights and climate consciousness. Now, I heard the Secretary of State argue that public bodies should not deviate away from foreign policy. But as we've discovered in this debate and in all the debates that we've had, that Glasgow District Council in 1981, a Labour-led local authority, gave Nelson Mandela the freedom of the city of Glasgow. It also encouraged boycotting of South African goods and services. But the Foreign Office policy at the time was not to support sanctions of the apartheid South African regime. And so the question again is, could Glasgow District Council in 1981 have awarded Nelson Mandela the freedom of the city of Glasgow, and would Glasgow District Council have been allowed to encourage the boycott of South African goods and services? Because if this bill had been in place then I think the answer to that question is that it could not. And I'll give way to my honourable friend.
And he gave way to Tommy Shepherd.
I thank my honourable friend for giving way. He's doing a great job at putting on record our opposition to this foul piece of legislation. But can I ask him, does he not think there is something particularly distasteful and grotesque that this is coming at this time, and that the only legislative response by the UK government to what is happening in the Middle East is to try and bring forward proposals to stifle criticism of Israel, when it is clear and there is so much evidence that Israel is standing facing charges of breaching international law and breaching the Geneva Convention? Surely most right-minded people in this country who believe in decency and fairness will think this is the wrong thing at the wrong time.
It also goes into territory such as local authority pension schemes, for example. Now, we know that Glasgow recently has been trying to divest itself of fossil fuels and things. Well, if they can exert that amount of control, who knows what else they're going to try and control. One of the things that really struck me was this idea that ministers could be fined for not doing what Westminster said. Now, this is a completely new step in the muscular unionism. And I mean, presumably any fines incurred by ministers will be paid for by us as taxpayers, but we are electing these people to put forward our views, and the idea that they could be fined for it if Westminster doesn't agree is horrifying.
I tell you how it just strikes me is it's yet another kind of incursion into devolved government's ability to speak out if they disagree with something that Westminster's saying. And this is taking it into, trade, foreign policy, but we've already had it in terms of the internal market with the internal market bill, which basically said, but there's got to be an even playing field throughout the UK, so governments in Scotland and Wales can't just go their own way any longer, even when it's devolved matters. And that's also happening with this, isn't it? Because it doesn't matter if it's a devolved matter.
Completely devolved matters, they can also be. And to me, it's diminishing the standing of the devolved parliaments by treating them, well, first of all, bracketing them together with local authorities and other bodies, but also, assuming there's a hierarchy that Westminster ministers are more senior than Scottish and Welsh ministers, which they're not. I mean, devolution isn't a hierarchy, as Mike Russell used to explain.
From their point of view, they're the UK ministers, and that's the kind of one that's got, it's the whole thing about
these are devolved matters.
Power reserved. I mean, they can take it back. So in a way, it's not equal. And I suppose, the question that's in my mind, I mean, we don't have an answer to this yet, is assuming, as looks very, very, very likely, that Labour will be in power in Westminster by the end of the year. Be interesting to know if they'd kind of reverse this as a bit of legislation, go back on it, or if they just go, we can't be spending a lot of time reversing stuff and leave it in place. We'll see what emerges from that.
What will be very interesting to see is whether a Labour government is so cavalier and dismissive of the Sewell Convention as the Tories have been, because that is one thing that Mark Drakeford, Labour First Minister in Wales, has been absolutely vocal about, just this contempt, you know, the damage that it potentially does to the union. Of course, remember, Mark Drakeford is a unionist. So we are going to be looking at that in more detail in the next couple of weeks about the whole constitutional situation. So we'll not get into that here.
Yes,
but
so
this is just, I suppose, the sum up.
It would, by force of law, prevent the Scottish ministers from even publishing a statement saying that they would do things differently were it not for this UK government bill. And it would allow the Secretary of State to investigate, issue compliance notices, and even levy fines on the Scottish ministers if they do not comply. This cannot be acceptable. The nature of parliamentary democracy means that there will inevitably be some members who think the government should be doing more in relation to a given issue in its procurement and investment decisions. And inevitably, there will be some members who think the government should be doing something differently, or not at all. The effect of this bill is to remove the ability of the Scottish ministers to take those views into account and to make decisions on them in relation to what are devolved matters. It will also remove the ability of this Parliament to hold Scottish ministers to account for those decisions, because Scottish ministers will be unable to act or potentially even explain why they have not acted. The Scottish ministers would only be allowed to take a disapproval of foreign state conduct into account in procurement and investment decisions, such as we have done in relation to Russia, if the UK government had first permitted this by way of regulations. If members will forgive the understatement, I am not sure that it is optimal to always have to rely on sound judgment from the UK government on such matters. But that is not the point. The point is that on devolved matters, such as in relation to public procurement, devolved ministers must be able to make the decisions they see fit, albeit always in compliance with international obligations and international law. This bill is a rowing back of devolution, and we must stand firm against that.
The result of the vote on motion 12551 in the name of Tom Arthur is yes 88, no 27. There were no abstentions.
No prizes for guessing which party the 27 contrary votes came from, but all parties except the Conservatives voted to withhold consent. So have Wales under the Sewell Convention. That should be an end of it. That should clear the matter up. Let's find out what happens next, and we'll update you if we hear any more.
Great. Good. Watch this space.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to our hot topic. I hope you found that interesting. It doesn't seem to have got a lot of attention, but if you think, as we do, that this is yet another appalling step that Westminster and particularly Gove are taking to remove the authority of the devolved parliaments, then please share it around to anybody you think would be interested. And if you haven't already subscribed, please do so. And you can watch the video version of this programme on our YouTube channel. We'll put a link in the notes. And we'll be back on Friday with our normal Friday broadcast. Catch you later. Bye now.